Monday, August 23rd, began with a blow-up. I was in Lyndon's bedroom, with Marvin, Jake, and Jack coming and going, discussing with Lyndon Liz's memo to Marvin about approval of travel for the girls who worked in the East Wing, who advanced trips like mine to the Grand Tetons, and Linda's to the Erie Fair, and Bessie's to preview the ballet in Connecticut that would be brought down for White House entertainment. Hopkins had pointed out to Marvin that previous first ladies had not had their travel expenses paid for out of the $25,000 travel allotment of the White House. Should this include the staff of first ladies? Their position seems oddly in limbo. They work for the White House, the whole overall operation. But should their travel be paid for, just as the male members would? Lyndon, ever fearful of raising expenses and arousing in it just criticism, was looking at it with a hard eye. I took the position that my few speeches, my few trips for Head Start, beautification, and so forth, had to be advanced and ought to be paid for, and my own personal ticket I would buy. And then I walked out, angry and hurt, and after what it must have been a very flabby presentation of my case, and then down to the theater to see a movie of our Virginia highway trip, which Rex Whitten had prepared and was very anxious to have me see and like. And I can't tell anybody I have unless I have. When I returned from the beauty parlor, I had a message that the president would like to see me in his office. I went with a certain amount of trepidation, because the last thing I need to bring to him, along with Vietnam and the steel strike, is personal problems. He was so sweet. He knew I'd been worrying about money to run the White House with when my separation pay from KTBC comes to an end this month, and for Lucy's foolishly expensive car and clothes to live up to the life we lead. He put his arms around me and said, "You don't have to worry about anything. You ought not to worry about money. I'll get you whatever you need. You'll always be safe there, because economy rides a fairly tight rein on me." And then he said, "One of the Jet Stars has to go to Fort Worth to be worked on anyway, and it can just be set up to go today and take you and drop you off. It'll be ready whenever you're ready." I was speechless and closer to tears than I have been in 4 or 5 years. I hugged him and walked out, not trusting myself to talk. Poor man, trying to walk the tightrope between loving and wanting to please his family and make them comfortable, and wanting to live up to the ethics, the sort of thrift, the sort of private actions that could face public scrutiny. Toughness must be one of the qualifications for this job, both private and public. It was a busy day getting ready to get off, talk with Bess about the tea for the Johnson City hostesses, about going with me. The ever serene Bess, it hit her hard when I suggested that she go. She has 2 sick children, both sets of parents out of town. She said she'd try to make it. She'd be ready by 5 if she could. Talk with Jim Ketchum about the Noah Webster picture. It seems Bill Benton's supposed donor in no wise wishes to part from his picture. About the Rutherford Hayes desk, which has been on tour with the Kennedy Memorabilia and which now the Kennedy Library expects to have. And then an hour and a half session with Rex Whitten of the Bureau of Public Roads and Jim Lacey in the Queen's bedroom. A thorough, intricate, tiring briefing on the freeway that Nancy Negley and Mrs. Tobin wrote me about, that will go through a part of Brackenridge Park and the Incarnate Word property. Nancy had stated their case well, with pictures of the sunken gardens, hike and bike trails, Girl Scout camping area. An ever-patient, very articulate Rex Whitten explored, probably for the 117th time with me, problems and the alternate solutions. The ever-growing traffic problem, which conflicted with retaining areas for recreation and beauty. In the end, I see no way out of this fight, now 6 years old, with the Texas Highway Department, the governor, and the Bureau of Public Roads, and so Rex Whitten says, about 70% of the population of San Antonio, of the opinion that this solution is the most functional and least damaging. I ask him, please, at least, to make it with planting as pretty as that roaring monster of freeway can be. Then a few moments with Sandy Fox about Lyndon's birthday present, and with Liz about her memo, "Take it easy, maybe we can work it out. At any rate, I'll fill my engagements and pay out of my own money for her or anybody else who advances me, and have less trips in the future." And then at 3:45, a bite of lunch. No wonder I was so hungry. and lots of mail to sign and autographing pictures, and at long last, all too brief, a session on the first draft of the speech for the Garden Club ladies and the Grand Tetons on September 7th. We left the White House at 5:15. Helen and Jean and Bess and I got on the Jetstar and flew to the ranch. And a very special feeling it was. This is the first time that I have been on a Jetstar on a trip of my own. It had been a tense and trying day. Emotion, angry, sad, or happy, are exhausting to me. And I was glad to just sit and read, or just to sit, and finally to have a couple of drinks and sandwiches aboard. We arrived at the ranch before dark, and Bess and I drove into Johnson City and sat down with Jesse Hunter, who planned the tea for the hostesses at the boyhood home, one of my main reasons for spending these 3 or 4 days here before Lyndon's arrival. It was set for Thursday, 4 to 6. She and Bess would divide the call. We decided to limit the citations of appreciation to the 5 who had given the top number of hours. We chose those to pour tea, talked about tours of the house and music, the things they would like best. Then we returned to the ranch at 9:30 in time for an early bed.